With UPS, future you gets seriously pumped. As a package handler, you'll have a great job this season. Make up to $20 per hour after bonuses for a 25-hour work week. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at upsjobs.com.
Time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis, presented by Fitness Market on 93.9 The Ville. Fitness Market is Louisville's premier location for home and commercial fitness equipment and electric bikes. Find them online at thefitnessmarket.com. Now, here's Mark Ennis and Mark Blankenbaker.
Welcome into The Drive here on 93.9 The Bill. The Bill. I said The Bills because I was reading Bills Patriots right there. 93.9 The Bill. There it is.
Start it over. We got to run it
back.
Yeah,
I know, right.
False start.
Back it up 5 yards. Back it up 5 yards. We'll do it again. Oh. How's everything
going? How's the weekend?
Yeah. How is everybody?
Well, it was kind of a nasty weekend. I had to flip my DFH company system back from hot to cold. The hot to cold, if you're having issues with your heating or cooling system, give DFH company a call at or you can find their number at dfhcompany.com. They have trained comfort systems if you're needing yours worked on. But otherwise, man, it's we're moving along. I got to see my mom and dad and sister yesterday for Mother's Day, and that was a big highlight for me.
Hope everybody had a good Mother's Day, even though, like Mark said, it was disgusting and cold outside. I blame all of this, Mark, on you deciding to get a pool.
The pool's not done yet, though, so I can't take...
It's the choice.
I can't take any blame for the pool being, happening, and then the downturn for May being like how it has been. Because April was awesome while the pool was being dug as well. But no, I think that we're getting concrete tomorrow. And then as soon as we get the cool pool company back out here after the concrete dries, we should have pool water system next week is what I'm thinking. So we're excited about it. So when the weather turns warm, you can thank me.
There you go. We moved over the weekend. That's why I wasn't here on Friday. But and by the way, shout out to Graduate Jack for filling in here. I heard it was a good show. I heard you guys did a good job. A few connection issues. I see.
These things happen.
Yeah, they happen. But anyways, we're all moved in. We're good to go.
Nice. It's always nice, Patty, when you get the Mother Nature middle finger. Oh, you got to move? How about freezing rain while you're trying to move
bro,
stuff?
It was. Oh,
I've done it, man. The day that I moved here, 2002, was the day of the ridiculous deluge of the Florida State game.
Oh, wow.
The Louisville one. Wow. And, of course, you know what that was. Wow. So it was not fun moving in that either.
Imagine the Indiana State-Louisville game from a couple years ago. Yeah. That's what it was on Friday.
Ridiculous.
As soon as the rain stopped, it was, all right, run, get the couches and beds, put it on the trailer, let's go. Like it was.
So you didn't stand in that weather and you're like, you know what we ought to do? Throw the ball 30 times.
We did not know that.
Okay.
And then blame it on Juwan Pass.
And then bench him, right?
Yeah. We ran the damn ball.
I love the run of the damn ball. I'm all in for that. You're bringing up some epic rains between the Indiana State rain game and the Florida State rain game.
That's two easy ones. The Kentucky one with the long delay.
Oh,
that's right. That was like a lightning situation.
Right.
And it did rain a lot, and we had the ponding of water there, in the end zone. But I've never seen Cardinal Stadium look like it did on that Indiana State game.
That was miserable.
I think Kelly Dickey looked it up and said, that was the most rain we've ever had on a Louisville football game day in history. He went through like all the rain data.
I just remember the rain collecting and just enveloping both end zones.
Yeah, and it was like coming down the stairs and like all these waterfalls. I've never seen anything like that, and hopefully we never see anything like that again. And it seems like we've had these little instances, whether it's rain, coronavirus, NCAA investigations, that have really just been a big drag on our past 5 years. So looking forward to getting beyond all that.
Well, we've got plenty to get into here today on a Monday, obviously, which has become kind of a tradition now. I'm sure that everyone watched both episodes of The Last Dance. I can't believe we've already done 8 hours of this. It goes by fast. That first hour yesterday was of the 2 hours, the fastest hour of TV I've ever, I can recall. Like, I could not believe how quickly that it went by, but we'll get into the guts of both of those here to start things off, because this was sort of, to me, this was like the meat of the episodes. of the series so far. What happened with Jordan, his dad dying, the retirement and baseball, and then the comeback, and all of just sort of the intermediate drama. So we'll get into a lot of that, a lot to break down there, including obviously a lengthy focus on poor LeBradford Smith when the poor guy was innocent. So we'll get into I felt bad for him. I listened to him on Dina this morning. I was like, man, I just feel bad. I mean, what can you say? But we'll get into all of that. More revealing stuff about Jordan. I think you finally got the at least a good chunk of the stuff that perhaps he was worried would make him look like a turd, which is, you know, yeah. We were told by multiple people that he was pretty concerned that he wasn't going to look great by the end of this. And I think you got at least a little bit of a flavor why that's so.
I enjoyed both episodes last night, and I think, you know, as we got towards the end of episode 7, which was the first episode last night, you know, maybe it's editorialized in Jordan's favor, but I do think it was actually Jordan's perspective of, I had to be this way, I had to go all out, because I wanted to bring my teammates with me to do the great things that I was wanting to do, and I had to be the person that I was. And he got a little choked up about it, you know, because I think he's a person that wants to be liked but also wanted to have his achievement too, and that's a tough balance to kind of, and I think he did it publicly during his career, but privately I think it's been a big challenge. And you know, they haven't gotten into it yet, and I don't know if they will, like his relationship with Charles Barkley just totally dissolving, you know, because of that competitive nature and the criticisms and how he just, you know, has these chips on his shoulders. But he's an interesting figure. I mean, I could probably do another 10 episodes after we wrap up next week.
Well, I've said this before, but when it comes to this series, I would pay like a little extra money just to have access to all the footage of him just crushing his own teammates, you know, in practice, because it's hilarious, but also it's instructive. I mean, quite frankly, he was like, look, I'm going to make practice way harder than anything we're going to face in the game, and then the game will be cake. And it was. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure talking when John trash. Paxson throws that game 6-3 up there, he's more worried about what Michael's thinking than anybody else is going to think when that thing doesn't go in. He's like, good God, don't kill me, don't kill me. And it goes in. Good. All right. Okay, we're okay.
Are we allowed to say on the radio what Burrell was called as a gardening tool over and over and over again?
I don't think that's
a word we're allowed to say?
Yeah, it's actually on my list here of things to get into. How impressive is the list of people that have been called a hoe by Michael Jordan? Right?
So funny.
Like,
it was so funny.
Over and over again, and effortless. And like, what the hell are you going to say? But you know what's so funny? And I made this joke during the show last night, both episodes. But like, he probably would make you think for at least a second, like, maybe I am a hoe.
Like, you know? Maybe I am.
Yeah, maybe I do suck. Right? Like, he's so, just such a force of nature. And we got to talk about like why that is. Because I think if his behavior on almost anybody else, and we're like, screw that guy. But he's Michael, it's Michael Jordan. And so, like, we got to look at it a different way.
This is a man so savage that he was talking trash to a man in the wheelchair about his college. You know, like that.
Yeah.
That was hardcore. I mean, the man is in a wheelchair. He's lost the ability to play basketball and to walk. And you're talking trash to him. And you're saying, I hear UConn has a really nice women's team.
He's relentless. We will get into that series in depth. At 3:30, some developments, some fascinating developments, but Daniel Wallach, who is a legal analyst for The Athletic and runs a sports betting and legal issues site that tracks all that sort of thing, has been digging in deep to this lawsuit filed by a fired former agent of Zion Williamson.
Gina Ford.
And it is fascinating. I think it was Friday. In talking about NCAA issues and how do they always, almost always, come to light, somebody gets mad. And when somebody's mad and somebody's jilted, they no longer have incentive to be quiet. And once that happens, then someone talks, someone gets in trouble, and the cover gets pulled off of something. You, as probably a Louisville fan, have known for a very long time and have probably asked yourself in some way or another, why the hell do we never hear about anyone with Nike? Right. And this is that the lawsuit that's been filed here and this latest document that basically makes him, well, that asks him to admit things, to either admit it or deny it. about things that are, but it's very specific, and it makes them, in the asking for the admission, makes some pretty aggressive allegations. Fair?
Yes, and it's also the third time that somebody, that three different individuals have made these specific allegations towards Duke, Coach K, Nike, and Adidas, and other entities. Gina Ford is a former business associate of Manoush Soud, who we all know was indicted in the Southern District of New York, along with Christian Dawkins and James Gatto, for and convicted, by the way, too. I think a lot of these guys took deals. I don't remember what Soud's sentencing was, but it doesn't matter. This came up with Michael Avenatti. He brought forth documents about a year ago, and then in the federal trial, this particular topic came up again. And to this point, it hasn't really been made a big deal about, but we've been making the joke for a while. Kansas offered Zion Williamson six figures to go to Kansas, but he went to Duke for free? No. So now we have a third iteration now, for and a third chance now for the NCAA to turn a blind eye to Duke, Nike, Coach K, and everybody else. And I have full confidence that the NCAA will selectively enforce and not do anything with Duke. How about you?
I fully share, and I'm not a person, I don't let people do this. I don't let people be cynical, and I don't let people be overly cynical about things and therefore get to just dismiss whether something happened or not or if it's important or not. I don't let that happen. But if you are someone who is incredibly cynical about the NCAA and what they'll do here, I got nothing for you. Like, I can't tell you to stop that because you're probably right, Mark. So we'll get into the guts of that. And again, Daniel Wallach will join us at 3:30. We'll talk with him and just get kind of the legal insight here and maybe not overreact to it, but let this be exactly what it is and maybe have some kind of appropriate expectations for what's going to happen here. But the situation is here. It is a jilted person. It's a wronged person. It's somebody who is on the cusp of making a lot of money as a representative of Zion Williamson, fired, and damn it, they're not going to take it anymore. But in the process, they are basically going to challenge Zion Williamson to either admit or he broke a bunch of rules or lie.
Right. And the reason why Gina Ford has brought this forward is because Zion Williamson signed with Gina Ford, out of Duke, and then he went and signed with CAA, and he used his way out of CAA or his way out of Gina Ford and into CAA by saying that she and Prime Sports, which is where Gina Ford works, did not follow the guidelines set forth by the North Carolina Uniform Athlete Agent Act and warned Zion of eligibility issues as a result of signing with her and Prime Sports. Well, Gina Ford's argument is, look, you weren't under the purview of the NCUAAA anyway because you were already ineligible at the time in which you signed with me. And so that's the difference between Gina Ford and I think Michael Avenatti, who presented all this stuff and was basically like, hey, listen, pay me and I'll shut up. Gina Ford's like, no, pay me because you entered into an agreement. You were already not an amateur. And now you cannot get out of your professional contract agency relationship with me and go to a different agency without owing me money because you were already ineligible. And that's the basis of the lawsuit.
So we'll get into to that because that is fascinating, and it at least opens up the proverbial can of worms about a Nike school, a kid going to a Nike school, the allegation that Nike folks and folks on behalf of Duke were involved in this, and it's obvious, it's Zion Williamson, it's an enormous deal, but it would at least open up the can of worms here for people who have just been pining for someone other than one of these poor saps that are associated with Adidas being sacrificial lambs here. This is the ultimate blue blood, Duke, here in this. And so we'll get into that with him and see what we can learn from that. Elsewhere, Kenny Johnson finally fired at LaSalle. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but that is an interesting development. We'll debate perhaps later, Mark, if we think that that's good or bad. And Kansas, even with all of this going on, continues somehow to get basketball recruits. And I'm fascinated by that. And maybe the difference there versus here, where it has obviously kind of weighed on basketball recruiting pretty heavily. So we'll do all of that. But the Last Dance last night, Mark, two episodes of it, your favorite part, the favorite thing that stuck out to you? I'll tell you mine. The 1 minute or so speech from Jordan, basically about, yeah, I was a horrible teammate, I was a jerk, but we were going to win, and that's the price that you pay. We got that, Patty Ice? All right, because this is him. This was him in a complete nutshell. I'm basically a sociopath, but we're going to win. And if you go along with me, you're going to win too. Here's what he said.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you, because you never won anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. Like, I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way. Break.
Now, here's why I loved that clip, and it's also kind of instructive of Michael Jordan as a crazy person, because there were 2 hours last night about some pretty heavy emotional stuff, going away from basketball to play baseball, the murder of his dad, all of that sort of thing, the allegations that his gambling somehow contributed to his dad being murdered, all of that sort of thing. The only time in that episode, outside of him sobbing in the locker room after they won, when he came back that first year, the first title after his dad was gone, the only time he showed any emotion whatsoever was talking about how bad he wanted to win and how hard of a teammate he was. He started to get a little choked up there, and he said cut right there. That's it. It's very him, very self-aware.
I think so. And, you know, there's very few people who have the tunnel vision and the singular focus of Michael Jordan. And I think that it took a lot out of him. And as far as my favorite part, like, that was definitely it. The clip that you played from Pat, that Pat just played, that was my favorite part from last night. And I think that, you know, him, you know, crying next to the trainer's table inside the locker room, you know, holding the basketball, you know, realizing that he just won a championship after his father's death and taking a break away from basketball. That's an iconic moment for me. You know, there in 1996, you know, I was 14 years old at that point in time. And I had been, you know, just pining for Michael Jordan to get back. And when he did in 95, that was a huge moment for me, you know, just as a sports, young sports fan. And so being able to kind of go back and relive that, see behind the curtain a little bit from what's going on there, I really enjoyed that part. And I also love the part about Steve Kerr and him kind of getting into a fight and Phil Jackson, like, basically getting Steve Kerr punched in the mouth. I mean, that's basically what happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Steve Kerr, if you didn't watch it, basically there was a practice where Jordan was upset that Steve Kerr was put on him. He was insulted by that. He was whipping Steve Kerr. And basically, Phil Jackson put the clamps on him by calling a bunch of fouls on him. And he fouled the hell out of Steve Kerr. And Steve Kerr punched him in the chest. And he punched Steve Kerr in the face. And then Jackson threw him out of practice. I thought, like, the most baller comment in that whole thing was, like, after practice. He's like, he has to call back, give me Steve Kerr's phone number. Because, of course, he didn't have Steve Kerr's phone number, right? Like, why would he? I don't need Steve Kerr's phone number, right? But now he does.
He didn't have it at that point. I mean, you got to remember, that was Steve Kerr was a brand new teammate of his at that point in time.
Well, not just that. I mean, I think we all have to remember they didn't have cell phones back then either. You know,
well,
like,
no, Michael Jordan had a cell phone in 96.
But I mean,
95.
It's not, the thing is,
size of a cinder block, but he had it.
But it's not like it is today, where I highly doubt he used that thing like we use them, where he's got everybody's number on hand.
Oh, I just thought it was funny, though. He's like, all right, I guess I got to get this guy's phone number and call him. But you know what? I thought it was funny to hear him say, because Steve Kerr said after that, basically, like, I drilled him in the chest, he drilled me in the face, and then after that, we were cool. And it was because he bowed back up to him. You know, and I think in the end, that's what Jordan, like, wanted, was somebody to bow back up at him, because then he knew, like, all right, you'll stand up for yourself. And I've heard this. I've heard this from Luke. I've heard this from others, that Rick was like this, that he would just,
like,
ride
you
in practice and ride you and ride you. And you better take it for a while, but there better be a bottom. But that once you show you've reached it, there'll be a little bit of mutual respect there. Quentin Snyder told me that. You know, and him and his dad, you know, one day told me that. The same kind of thing happened there. And that once you sort of bow back and you swing back, Rick will treat you like a man. And he did.
And I think that's exactly what Jordan was he wanted somebody that was going to, that he could challenge and that they would respond. And he was talking about Burrell. He was like, he was just the nicest guy ever and I could never get him to hit me. You know, he's like,
you know,
like,
isn't that funny? Like the most, like the moment in the whole 2 hours of that show where he, you can see his, you ever have like somebody that's done something dumb and they get to talking about it and you can see like in their head, they're not talking to you anymore. They've gone all the way back there in their head. And yeah. they're staring off into space talking about it. There's a lot of regret and a lot of confusion about what happened and all that sort of thing. That's the way he talked about not being able to get Scott Burrell to punch him in the face.
That was
it was bizarre.
It was funny. He's like, I wanted him to just stick up for himself so bad.
Like he a missed so opportunity. Much. Like they lost the game seven. He's like, I couldn't get him to do it. And like he still doesn't understand why.
Right. And you know, the other part of it that I really thought was interesting was Pippen not going in, you know, for that final shot and Kukoc hitting that game winner. I guess, you know, I just kind of purged that from my memory. You know, it might have been, I guess, because I was 13 years old at the time that it happened, but I didn't remember that happening at all. So it was kind of, you know, you're picking up bits and pieces of the story, you know, that you had that I had forgotten. And that was one of those things that I had definitely forgotten.
I remembered that, but I will say that I'm glad they went into the detail that they did on that. I had forgotten that, one, that was a playoff game. I just thought right. It was a game. I had forgotten over time that that was a playoff game and that they were down 2-0 to the Knicks in that series, and he refused to go back in. For as much as we've talked about this maybe being a flattering picture of Jordan, maybe not. Not a flattering picture of Scottie Pippen. And I thought it was so funny because I just did not expect it. Maybe I should have. When they asked Pippen about it, he's like, yeah, look, looking back, you know, was that the best thing to do? Probably not. But would I do it again? Yes.
Yes.
He just said, yeah, looking back, I'd do it again. I don't care. I was just not ready for that at all.
Well, I think some of that goes into Scottie Pippen's just distaste for everything in the front office. And then that just spilling onto the court. Remember, they had that total like aversion to Tony Kukoc, you know, from the Dream Team, and they really just weren't set out to embarrass him. 3 years later, Tony Kukoc is given the assignment to hit a game-winning shot, in exchange for Scottie Pippen. And Scottie Pippen, I think, you know, from his contract, how bad it was to now having the dishonor of having Tony Kukoc get the green light, not him, and having him inbound the ball. You know, some of that was that Scottie Pippen was a tremendous passer. And Phil Jackson was probably like, look, I know you're probably the only guy that can get one of these guys the ball, you know, in this 1.2 seconds that we have. But Scottie didn't see it that way. Scottie thought that it was his turn to be MJ. And I think some of the thing is that with this entire documentary is that you're going to see human elements of Phil Jackson, of Dennis Rodman, of Scottie Pippen, and even Michael Jordan a little bit, because he's not as great as he was, not a perfect person. And I think we're just starting to see the human layers of every single person. There's just not a lot of Michael Jordan was really inhuman on the basketball court, though. That was really the thing that you can take away from all of this.
Yeah, look, in the end, he's just such an incredible force of nature and demanded all of this from everyone around him because he did give it. And I thought the funny comment that he wasn't being funny when he said it, but he's like, I never demanded anything of anyone that I didn't do myself. And that's true. He killed himself to be better than everybody at everything all the time. So he at least had some credibility in being unrelenting on everyone else too because he never let up on himself either. And I think that obviously comes to. I've still got a question for you about Jordan that I'm kind of curious what you'll have to say about this. I'll do it a little bit later.
Okay.
Because there's one element of him that I can't quite put it all together yet, but I want to talk about that a little bit later because we got to take a break here, quickly switch up gears, and we are going to talk with, again, Daniel Wallach, legal expert on this admissions and this lawsuit against Zion Williamson over the weekend that became public. What it means, what they're asking him to do, timelines, all that sort of thing. On the other side, here on The Drive on 9th and the Ville.
You're Locked on the Drive, presented by Fitness Market.
I think Mekhi Becton's terrible.
Right here on 93.9 The Ville.
I like to be high.
Now here's Mark Ennis and Mark Blankenbaker.
Welcome back into the drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Mark Blankenbaker. Both of those drops, Mark Blankenbaker thinks
blasphemy.
He would deny viciously. Blasphemy. He would deny both of those very much. But we mentioned to open the show here some rather explosive allegations against Zion Williamson and his family, filed and now made public over the weekend by Gina Ford, who was someone that was representing him previously. And now he has been being sued for that, and is being asked to admit all manner of things that would get him in very big hot water. And Daniel Wallach is a legal analyst with The Athletic, among a million other things, and he has written about this extensively and joins us now here on The Drive to talk about this. Daniel, we appreciate you making time for us on short notice, man. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. And I think I was the one who made it public yesterday. Gina's attorneys filed it in a court system where it languished for like 4 or 5 days, and I just happened to come across it Sunday morning, and my eyes bugged out. And then I, tweeted it, which is now the new newspaper.
Oh yeah,
everything is developing in real time on Twitter. I put that out there, and it just led to this opening of the gates of hell in one day.
For people who don't understand what this is, it's a document as part of a larger lawsuit, basically telling Zion Williamson to admit to a bunch of stuff, him and his family. What's the root here? What's the basis of the lawsuit? How did this get started? What's going on that this was part of it?
Yeah, this is the genesis to all this is a litigation, a lawsuit that Zion Williamson filed a year ago. When he declared for the NBA draft, he signed with a marketing agent who would help bring endorsement deals to him, shoe deals. And he terminated the deal within a few weeks. It was an onerous contract that was a contract that couldn't be terminated. It was lifetime in perpetuity. And he wanted to sign with a different agent. And this agent made threats of litigation because she said a deal's a deal. You can't terminate it. So he ran to a North Carolina federal court roughly in May of 2019 to seek a judicial declaration that his marketing agreement with this agent is invalid because it violates North Carolina law. And there's a North Carolina law called the Uniform Athlete Agents Act, and many states have a version of that where it's designed to protect vulnerable student athletes from these, unscrupulous agents. I'm not saying she's unscrupulous, but the law applies even-handedly to all agents that want to, enter into these agency deals with collegiate basketball, football players, any kind of a student athlete. And it requires the agent to have a registration on file with the Secretary of State and to abide by certain disclosure guidelines before he or she can even so much as have contact with the athlete. So you can't even contact a student athlete in North Carolina if you're an agent, unless and until you've registered in the state. And he brought a lawsuit alleging that she didn't do that, that at the time the agreement was struck, he was a student athlete and she was never registered with the state. So this became a convenient out for Zion Williamson. So he sued over that, and then she countersued in Miami. And the reason she went all the way across the country to file the lawsuit is that she did not want North Carolina law, and in particular this Uniform Athlete Agents Act, to govern the outcome of the case. In Florida, that law wouldn't have applied so easily, and the contract that she induced Zion to enter into has a Florida choice of law provision. So she wanted to have this decided under a straightforward contract law principle governed by Florida law. So that's where the suits kind of existed on parallel tracks about a year ago. And then 3 weeks ago, there was this surprising new development where a runner, this third person named Cedric Hughes Johnson, who knew Zion Williamson from AAU basketball days, he sued Gina Ford because he claimed that he had a finder's fee agreement, that he was the introducing agent who brokered the deal between Zion Williamson and Gina Ford, and that he was promised 5% of the earnings by Gina Ford. And in his lawsuit, He claims, and he foolishly claimed, that the initial meeting between Zion Williamson's parents and Gina Ford occurred in January of 2019, long before he declared for the NBA draft while he was still, you know, playing college basketball for Duke. And if that contact actually occurred, it would be a clear violation of this North Carolina athlete agent statute. And if that were to happen, if it were deemed a violation, the contract gets invalidated. That's the penalty for violating the UAAA. Any agreements signed in violation of it are invalid. So that's where we stand.
Wow, that is a mouth. That is an incredible amount of information about the law. So basically, Zion's saying, "Yeah, I signed this, but it was actually illegal. So you should let me out." And she's saying, "No, it's not illegal because we did this in Florida, and it's illegal for you to break it."
That's right. And she's also suing CAA, his new agent, Creative Artist Agency, for interfering with the contract. So she has asserted breach of contract claims against Zion. She's also claiming that he stole trade secrets because he basically took her marketing plan and basically ran with it and are not compensating her. So they stole these trade secrets. And she's also suing CAA for tortiously interfering with the contract. So she wanted this very badly to take place in Florida, where the law would probably not favor Zion Williamson as much as it would had this case been brought in North Carolina. But a few weeks ago, the North Carolina federal court denied her motion to dismiss the lawsuit, and now the case is going to move forward in North Carolina. And the Florida case is actually stuck in the mud because Williamson brought an appeal of a decision, or, you know, he tried to get the case dismissed on the lack of personal jurisdiction because he has no contacts or nexus with the state of Florida except for this choice of law provision. So he is appealing that ruling, and by virtue of that appeal, the case can't go forward. So for all intents and purposes, this now will proceed in North Carolina federal court, which changes the dynamic of the lawsuit because now procedurally the merits of the case, I think, favor Williamson if it's more likely than not that the North Carolina judge will apply North Carolina law.
Is that the purpose of the questions that she's demanding that he answer is to basically demonstrate that he was not already ineligible at the time that he would have had that meeting and signed with her?
Yeah, that's going to be their theory. Basically, if he was paid under the table 10 years ago, well, he was ineligible from the moment he received the money and was never an eligible student athlete. That's a mouthful. But I don't think a court is going to buy into that creative argument because the focus is going to be on what the parties knew at the time they entered into the contract. In April of 2019, we didn't know anything about any payments and by the way, we don't even know if this is true to begin with. These are just questions that she has posed to him that she wants to have answered under oath. But given what the parties knew in April 2019, she had no reason to believe that he was receiving improper payments. They were dealing with each other based upon a state of affairs that existed over a year ago. I don't think a court is going to buy into this notion that 2 years later, there's this discovery that comes out that he got paid under the table and his entire amateur existence never happened. That's a tall order. Secondly, I don't think that issue is relevant. It's threadbare relevance, but I think a court will find it too attenuated to be relevant evidence and will, when Zion Williamson's attorneys object to this discovery on relevance grounds, I think they're more likely than not win that battle, particularly in North Carolina. Maybe in a Miami, Dade County state court system, the judge wouldn't care. But when you move this into North Carolina, I don't care that they're federal judges for life. The home venue serves as a little bit of a comfort zone. And I think it's highly unlikely that a court would buy into an argument like this that seeks to basically invalidate the entirety of Zion Williams's collegiate career, all 1 year of it, to give the agent the benefit of this creative argument because she didn't know anything in April 2019. I don't believe she gets the benefit of time travel here.
Talking with Daniel Wallach here, legal analyst for The Athletic, among other things here about the lawsuit filed against Zion Williamson. Daniel, these questions that he's being asked, you know, admit this, admit that, that sort of thing. Typically in these kinds of cases, do you already know the answer when you challenge somebody to answer these questions, or are you fishing?
Well, you should, but I think this is a fishing expedition. There was an article this morning from Dana O'Neill in The Athletic. I think, Mark, you pointed out the connection that she drew between Muniz Sood, who was involved in a college basketball scandal, and he was a business partner of Gina Ford's in a separate business, but one that also touched upon sports and entertainment. So this article draws upon all the funky connections, that she has. To answer the question, they admitted in the article that they don't know, that they've read and heard a lot of rumors, and this is what they're trying to find out. And this is what discovery in a civil litigation is for. It's almost like they call it a fishing expedition. You're casting a wide net to see if you can gain access to any evidence that could help bolster your case. So I think the answer is they don't know, but I think as an agent who's been in this industry for a long time, if you know something, she probably has an inkling, more evidence or more knowledge than you or I would have, because she deals in that universe. You and I don't. So in large part, I would think that an agent that's accusing or suggesting that a player is taking money under the table probably has a decent idea whether or not that's true. But just throwing it out there alone raises the stakes and raises the visibility on this case and creates this whirlwind of adverse publicity that we've seen play out over the last 24 hours. Mike Krzyzewski was trending yesterday on Twitter. Yeah. Duke was trending yesterday on Twitter, all because of a question that was asked. Not a fact, not evidence, nothing that has been deemed admissible, just somebody asking a question, no different than anyone on sports talk radio, but it's done under the cover of a lawsuit, and any attorney can ask any question they want. I mean, they can ask if you were born in Pluto. That doesn't make it true, and that shouldn't lead to headlines that Mark might have been born in Pluto. So we're too early in the game for this to have any real potential repercussions. And first of all, he's under no obligation to even answer this yet, because the requests were filed in a Florida state court case that's being appealed. And while the case is on appeal, it stayed or paused as to Zion Williamson. He doesn't even have to answer it. It will be months before that appeal is resolved. And while the appeal is going on in Florida, the North Carolina case will likely proceed with discovery. So I would imagine that this issue will surface again when Gina Ford and her lawyers reserve those document requests and those requests for information under the aegis of the North Carolina federal court action. So we could end up in the same place 3-4 months down the road, and then there will be an admissibility battle that will have to be decided by the judge.
We're used to with NCAA cases, they can't make people talk. They can't threaten them with perjury if they lie to them. And so we basically whoever wants to volunteer is the only people that ever get to talk. What's the scenario in this case where Zion has to answer these questions? And is he under a penalty possibly of perjury if he doesn't answer them honestly?
That's right. He brought this lawsuit, so by bringing a federal court lawsuit, he's already subjected himself to the jurisdiction and the authority of this federal court. And if court says he has to answer them, he has to answer them, and he has to answer truthfully under oath. Of course, that doesn't mean he will answer truthfully under oath, because the law books are filled with numerous examples of people who lie under oath. I mean, they almost impeached the president over that 20 years ago. So it's no guarantee of anything. But while the NCAA doesn't have any jurisdiction over Zion Williamson, Judge Loretta Briggs in the North Carolina federal court has the power to order him to answer questions. And if and when he answers those questions, we'll find out whether and to what extent Duke or Coach Krzyzewski have any exposure. And I would think that Coach Krzyzewski isn't the issue here. The issue is whether a player, a student athlete, received improper benefits while he was playing for the team, and that could end up leading to all the games that he participated in being forfeited for Duke. But we're a long way away, and there are a lot of ifs, and I'm skeptical that he's even going to be forced to answer that question.
What is
at most, these are just questions right now. They're not facts.
What's the next step for this? If for people who are going to be paying attention, what's the next thing that happens in the timeline of these trials? I know the procedure. We don't know this stuff, but you do. What's next?
Well, Gina Ford has already answered the federal court lawsuit. So the next stage is what's called discovery. The parties haven't yet had their scheduling conference. A court requires parties in a civil litigation to have a meet and confer conference where they agree on basically the deadlines and how many depositions will be taken, how many interrogatories, and then they submit a proposed schedule to the federal court judge who will then, you know, so order it. And at that point, discovery can begin. So I believe over the next month, you'll probably see, I don't think we'll see, but the parties will probably begin to caucus on you know, sort of how to conduct discovery and then ask the court to issue a scheduling order. So I believe that the depositions, the fact discovery, probably won't start in the North Carolina case until around the middle of June. But I would expect the middle of June, July, August, September, October to be occupied with depositions and written discovery requests going back and forth, with the possibility or with this culminating, not necessarily in a trial, but when discovery is completed, I think you'll see Zion Williamson file a motion for summary judgment to try to get the case resolved on the merits in his favor without a trial. And if we see that at all, we're probably looking much later on in the year. But for now, this is just the fact-gathering process. It's not like Allie McBeal or L.A. Law where the case gets wrapped up neatly in a bow within an hour. Federal court litigation, the time track for a typical civil case, you know, could be anywhere from, you know, 1 to 2.5 or 3 years. And we're already a year into the case, but I would expect at least 6 to 9 more months of litigation in this context unless the parties settle.
Is there anything in here that seems concrete about what people from Nike did? Because I think that's what people are dying to see, is what everyone knows about the Adidas case and the FBI and all of that. But everyone insists that Nike does the same thing, Under Armour does the same thing. Is there anything in here that you can look at and be like, okay, clearly they know that Nike did this and they're trying to get them to admit it?
Not to my knowledge that there's anything that's been established in the lawsuit. We haven't even had depositions. There have just been pleadings and defenses and allegations. But the one connective tissue between this case and the broader collegiate basketball scandal may be the coincidental or not coincidental relationship between Gina Ford and Munis Sood, who pled guilty in the college basketball case. He may very well have just been, you know, a partner with Gina in this innocent business, and it's just this unfortunate coincidence that he happened to be her partner. But that could be one link in a series of, you know, it's a building block, and I believe Zion Williamson's attorneys are going to try to scrutinize that relationship. And if you have a subscription to The Athletic, Dana O'Neill had a lot of original reporting on sort of the background to Gina Ford and the relationships and basically a lot of the information that's not known about her. Today's article really brings a lot of that to light. And while it could be a coincidence, that's what discovery is for. And I believe that Williamson's attorneys are going to, you know, explore and poke into that relationship.
All right, we appreciate Daniel Wallach, The Athletic, legal analyst there, among other things. Thank you so much for the quick turnaround and getting on with us here today with all this breaking. Look forward to your reporting on this in the future, man. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. There you go, Daniel Wallach. He dug right into it, man. Could you imagine, Mark, if you were just like poking around on the, you know, your court reporting website, like Zion went, what? And there's like a big fat lawsuit about Zion Williamson. And like
5 days ago?
That's crazy.
What's happening? Like, how does that happen? You know, but, you know, props to Daniel for finding that. I can confirm I'm not from Pluto. You know, it's one of those weird things where, like, I think that there's a variety of ways that the court can rule on this. But I, you know, and he's definitely going to have a lot more, you know, clearance and, you know, more clarity into this. But I do think Gina Ford's argument that, look, you weren't eligible, you know, at the time you entered into the agreement with me. So this NCUAA thing doesn't hold any water. I think that, you know, it's a interesting thing. She probably it was probably the worst contract ever that Zion Williamson.
Oh, and she saw a big fat dollar signs, right? And was like, we're gonna get this guy for life. He doesn't even know.
He doesn't even know. Right. And it was probably the right thing to get out of that agreement and go with CAA. But anybody who's involved with Manoush Sood from the beginning is gotta be, you know, one of these unsavory characters. And these are the types of individuals that we see, you know, Gina Ford with the runner, you know, with Zion Williamson's former teammate, you know, or person that he knew from AAU, you know, introduces Zion to Gina Ford. You know, you've got shoe companies involved. It's the same type of partnership structure that we've seen with Christian Dawkins, James Gatto, and Manoush Sood as well.
Well, they didn't invent this.
No.
They didn't invent this. And I think what has been maybe perhaps most frustrating to me, and we'll get into the guts of this on the other side here, the collective yawn about this, of course Zion got paid. Well, you know, that's cool. That's cute that y'all want to, everyone wants to, of course you should get paid. You probably didn't get paid enough. While Louisville's about to get burned down over here.
Right. I'm not in the mood for that. It's like, I don't care that Zion Williamson got paid. Meanwhile, Louisville should get the death penalty for Brian Bowen. Exactly. Oh, sorry.
Can we have that attitude with everybody? If so, cool.
Let's all be held to the same standard. And that's what I've been asking for a very long time, and why I don't think the NCAA will do anything about this, even though this is the third time that somebody's brought forth these set of allegations, specifically with Zion Williamson and Duke and Nike and Adidas. It's the third different, you know, part of this person who's brought this up. So this is not some tightly held secret. This is widely known. And so now what is the NCAA going to do about it?
All right. Hour number one here in the books. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue on with this. Let you sound off on that and other things, including the interesting developments now with Kenny Johnson and LaSalle. So we'll get into all of that and more on the other side on The Drive on I-Thunderville.